This is Guardian Radio, your station for up-to-the-minute news, intelligent, interactive, and engaging conversation. 96.9 FM. The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Network.
You have to be strong in today's world.
Strong.
Keep your focus and
up.
What you believe in, how to achieve all your dreams.
Hey.
Keep moving forward. Never accept less than who you are.
Live
your best life.
Hey.
Be strong and free. It's back.
Well, it's back with Mahash Black and sponsored by Atlantis Paradise Island, The Ministry of Health, Fidelity Bank Bahamas, Cable Bahamas, Rev Christmas, AML Foods Limited, SMG Caribbean, Nassau Tile, Baja Retreat and Spa, and the Cancer Treatment Centers of America.
Good afternoon, Bahamas, and welcome to The Hit Back. I'm your host, Nahaja Black. It is a beautiful day here in the 242. It is what we would call soup day. It's a great day. The weather is changing. You know, we're getting more cloudy skies, but it doesn't necessarily mean rain. This is my kind of weather. Can we get it to at least 50 degrees Fahrenheit so I can really be happy? Whip out a jacket? That would be fantastic. I've got university coats. I haven't worn since university, so you know they don't fit. What I wouldn't give to really squeeze into one of those right now. C'est la vie. We live in the Bahamas. Everyone, hope you're having a great day. I've got a great show for you today. Going to talk on one of my favorite topics that I don't get enough time to have these machinations with regards to the conversation. So I'm looking forward to it. I welcome, I think this would be the second time the minister has been on my show. I think the first time it was over the phone, I think. But this will be the first time that the Minister Fred Mitchell, the Minister of Foreign Affairs and Public Service, will be joining us under the new administration. So without further ado, let's welcome Minister Fred Mitchell joining us, Member of Parliament for Fox Hill. Minister, welcome.
Thank you very much. I'm sorry about my informality, but I'm in the midst of a travel.
Oh, no. It was no informality at all. You look fantastic, Minister. You're ready to go. And I gather wherever you are, it's colder than where we are.
Yes, it's -5 Celsius here, so that's quite
good times. Good times. Is it snowing?
No, it's actually clear air and quite a smooth flight. Chicago to Rochester was 15 minutes in the air.
Well, stay safe. Glad to hear it. And that's my favorite type of weather. Cold, frigid cold, no snow. That's beautiful weather. That's like God's kingdom. Anyways, Minister, it's good to have you on the show today. I know you're strapped for time, so I'd like to let's just dive in.
Yeah,
right.
Sure.
As the minister, again, this is a familiar role for you, Minister Mitchell, the Minister of Foreign Affairs, the Minister, I know at one point you were the Minister of Immigration, but now you're the Minister of Foreign Affairs and Public Service.
Right.
And the Ministry of Foreign Affairs is an interesting one to me, and the reason why I wanted you on the show today was because I had started to notice that there's been a lot of, I don't know if the word is appearances, but a lot of chatter. Right. And a lot of chatter on the international sphere. This administration has come out of the blocks. One of the first things the prime minister did was have an exceptional speech at the UN General Assembly, very strong regarding climate change. Just recently in Glasgow, he also gave a very formidable speech that has caught the attention of the world with regard to climate change. So very impressive there on the international stage. And then, of course, I'm noticing, of course, the U.S. Chargé d'Affaires, and the Chinese ambassador. I've even heard the Canadian Chargé speak as well. That there's an uptick in conversation. And it made me ask the question again, and I've asked this question for some years now. What is the Bahamas' foreign policy agenda? And I'd like to know from you, Minister, what is that agenda? What is our plan or our intention when we step into the world?
I think quite simply, it is the question of making it possible for Bahamians, wherever they go in the world, to have an ease of passage throughout the world, whether they're going there as tourists or whether they're going as business people or for education or healthcare, that when they raise that Bahamian passport, they don't have issues going around the world. Now, to do that, I think you have to follow basically the creed, which was set for us by the first foreign minister, who was Lyndon Pinling. And he said at the time that he applied for the United Nations membership of the country in 1973, that Bahamas was committing itself to multilateralism and would be friends to all, enemies to none. And that's basically our posture.
And I like that. So friends to all, enemies to none. What is the advantage of that position? What is the advantage for us as a people to that position?
Well, as a small state, you can leverage your relationships for the betterment of your people. We can't engage in anything which causes a hot war or a cold war, for that matter, because it would simply damage us, and we have no way really of enforcing our will on other people. So our job is really moral suasion. For example, we just made a decision last week to pull everybody out of Haiti, because even though our reconnaissance people said that essentially it's safe for them, I just felt uncertain about it. And I thought to myself, if something happened, we have no means of extracting our diplomats out there. You know, the United States can send in a helicopter, send in the Marines and pick up their diplomats and send them out. We don't have that to do. So we have to be much more cautious in the way we approach things internationally. And it's our relationships that causes the Bahamians to be able to move around the world in that seamless fashion that I was talking about.
If you're just tuning in, Minister Fred Mitchell joining us on the show. So then when we talk about, and you know, that's one of the things that I've said, you know, how do we leverage, you know, what is our space, our might in the world, right? That things tend to happen to us, the Bahamas, things happen to the Bahamas, we don't happen to things. It's a weird statement, but I gather you get what I'm saying there. You're right. We don't have, Minister, and I think all of us understand that there's no, you know, weaponry, no military might. The things that we are known for is proximity, deep oceans, our touristic features. What part of our natural resources or our geopolitical position that helps us to be unique to the world, if at all?
Well, the fact is that we're tied to the United States by geography, really tied at the hip. So they are a major trading partner, and they are the dominant partner in this hemisphere and in the world. And that, of course, brings benefits, of course, but there's a burden with it that's carried with it as well. The benefits outweigh the burden by far. That does not mean that we don't have interests which are dissimilar to theirs. So I describe the relationship with the United States as not the same, but similar and close enough. Michael Manley once said at a speech he gave, he's the former Prime Minister of Jamaica, and he said that one of the values of this region is that, you know, that tens of millions of tourists come to this region every year for their vacations, and vacations are very important to people. So we serve that function. That's the service which we provide. And that must come with some respect, because if you want your countrymen to come here, have a seamless and good experience, then the Bahamas has to be developed, and so does the region, has to be properly developed. It is not acceptable for there to be two standards of living, the tourists living in pizzazz and wealth, while everyone else who serves the tourist product, they live in poverty. And that's the struggle which we have as a country on the domestic side, is to ensure that our people share in the wealth that the countries that are the feeder countries for the tourism product respect our position and help us develop. So that's what Philip Davis has been doing as the Prime Minister in the last couple of months, trying to make the case that what is happening worldwide is existential for us. It's not a joke. And if things don't improve in 100 years, there'll be no Bahamas. Mm-hmm. And there are some countries in the Pacific who've already negotiated with New Zealand and Australia to move their populations because their land is disappearing. And that's the kind of negotiations we will have to get into if this is not stopped. So we are important. The Pope, the late Pope, John Paul II, I quote him quite a lot. But he said that, you know, each person, each nation is intrinsic in itself. It doesn't derive, or we don't derive our value because of what we have materially. That has little to do with it. It's the content of ourselves intrinsically. And we have a right to live. Our culture has a right to survive. And it's on that basis that we face the world.
Hmm. So then let's dive into the other relationship, right? And that we also have a good and a strong relationship with the People's Republic of China. And that relationship is seen in investments, in terms of hotels. We have a port in Grand Bahama. And it is an interesting relationship that the Bahamian people, the populace in general, has with the investor of China, right? And I think that is, I think we can be very candid in saying that many Bahamians feel a tad bit weary of the relationship with China and the Bahamas, leery of this relationship with China and the Caribbean. What do you say to the Bahamian populace when you talk about, or when we talk about the Bahamas' relationship with China? How do we balance it? How do we assuage some concerns with regards to it?
I think that you have to apply your logical mind to these things and not jump to conspiracy theories. I think the first thing is you ought to look at the facts of what actually took place. My starting point is Joe Biden was then the Vice President of the United States. I think it was 2013, and we were all down in Trinidad. Prime Minister Christie was then at the helm. And Joe Biden, representing the Obama administration, said at that time, look, if it's cash you countries in the Caribbean want, we've got no cash to give you. And if China's giving away cash, God bless you if you can get it. That's what he said. Mm-hmm. And this is a region which is suffering from a capital deficit. So it needs money to develop. And the terms on which the money, those terms are offered are on strict commercial terms, as I understand them. I don't see, there's no evidence there's anything nefarious about it. Mm-hmm. And there are no designs, as I see it, on no hegemonic designs on the region by the Chinese. excuse me. There has to be, you have to be careful that racism is not involved here. What you do know is, for example, there was a recent article which you supplied me with. Mm-hmm. Excuse me.
No problem.
And in that, the were misapplied, mm-hmm. to some extent. The information was, in some senses, inaccurate. So let's take the assertion that the Chinese, which is the way they always put it, have invested, or they put so much money in the country and have these hegemonic designs. And mm-hmm. in Freeport. Well, as it has, that is not a Chinese government investment. That's an investment by someone who is a Chinese national who lives in Hong Kong. The company is, in fact, a Hong Kong company, and it is private capital. It's not public capital. So that's inaccurate to say that the Chinese government controls the port in Freeport. That's simply inaccurate. Hmm. The next step they go on to say is that because the Chinese lent from their export-import bank monies for the development of Bahama, that somehow there was some nefarious intent there. So let's go back to the history of that. Remember that the investor defaulted twice on his obligations to banks. The first was the Bank of Nova Scotia, and he defaulted on those obligations. So the thing went into receivership or was taken over by administrators, followed by the then Prime Minister, Hubert Ingram, arranging for the Chinese Export-Import Bank to come in and provide the capital for its further development. That was followed by a second default by the developer. Now, under our laws, the bank had a mortgage or debenture over the properties. And they went to court. the court, the Supreme Court, supervised and said that the Export Import Bank was owed money because their mortgage was in breach. And so according to the Supreme Court, there was a sale held, and on normal commercial terms, a private investor again from Hong Kong bought the Bahama Hotel. So again, it's not accurate to say that it's the Chinese who bought or control Bahama. But there's a convenient narrative driven by interests in the United States. And I understand that, you know, they have their political point of view, and I don't think we ought to get in that row because it's not our place to get in the row. But I just say to people to apply one's logical mind to these things. I don't think that it is accurate to say, or I think it's that the Chinese have designs on the Bahamas or the region other than their own national aspirations, which is to have influence around the world. I mean, they're very smart people. They don't believe that this is a staging ground for some geopolitical war between themselves and the United States. I mean, goodness, the place, Bahamas is 50 miles away from Florida. How in God's name would you have a geopolitical war in a place 50 miles from Florida and expect, there's no possible way you can win that. So, you know, so the United States is clearly, let's say again, our major trading partner, closest friend, closest ally. There's no question about that. So I think Bahamians just ought to apply their logical minds to these issues, and I think we'll be fine.
Well, let me ask you that. Even on those points there, actually, let's take a break, Minister, because I want to come back to that point that you're making there. Because, of course, we know that China and the United States are at enmity. And I don't know if the enmity is a strong word, but they are.
Well, I think it's more apparent than real. That's my view. It's more apparent than real.
Right now,
manufacturing takes place in so many areas in China in order to serve the United States market. Whatever the present dislocations are happening between them, it's, not my business, really. Mm-hmm. Whatever is happening now, I think that's all going to calm down because everybody's going to recognize their interdependence, and we have to simply get along. That's just the way it is. I don't think there's going to be any hot war. I don't think any of those things are going to happen.
No, I don't think so either, but it's curious because I want to ask this on the other side of the break. Is there an opportunity to leverage? Because I think you remember... sometime maybe 2-3 years ago, the governor of Florida, Ron DeSantis, speaking about his concern with China within the Bahamas in the region, so close to the United States, talking about, oh, it's there right in the doorsteps of Florida. And that only leaves me with one question. How do we leverage this? Is there a leveraging point where we can then benefit from the U.S., as the article is saying, and at the same time benefit from our friendship with China? Being that great friend in the middle and getting the most return that we possibly can. Hold that thought, though. Sure. Minister Fred Mitchell joining us, Minister of Foreign Affairs and Public Service. You're listening to The Hit Back with Nahaja Black. We will be back right after this.
At Fidelity, the holidays are all about family, spending time with loved ones, and being thankful for the little things in life. Worrying about bills should be the last thing on your mind, especially during the holidays. Let Fidelity help you get your bills under control. Fidelity can also get you started with a real savings plan that actually pays you interest. The only thing you need to think about is what you will do with the savings in your pocket this Christmas. Now that's what I'm talking about. Fidelity Bank is here for you this holiday season because you are family, and family is important to us.
When I had got prostate cancer, my family didn't know if I was going to live at Cancer Treatment Centers of America. Within days, I got an appointment. They presented me with treatment options, and we set up a robotic prostatectomy. When my scans came back, there are no signs of cancer. They don't see you as a number. They see you as a part of family. I'm going on with my life. It's a real gift.
Call us at Cancer Treatment Centers of America.
Back, listening to The Hit Back with Nahaja Black, Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. It's a beautiful day again. Please be safe. Continue to social distance as best as you can. At the same time, living your best life. But please stay safe. We've got joining us all the way from Minnesota, the Minister of Foreign Affairs, the one and only, Minister Fred Mitchell. why did you chuckle?
That means I'm owned by the Ocean Club, then.
The one and only. Well, I mean, the accommodations are nice. Yeah. Thank you so much again, Minister, for joining us and being on the show. Yeah. So continuing where we left off, right? Yeah. I tend to look at these things, Minister, and I get a little excited for us, right? I like being at that, you know, you have this opportunity where you are hearing whispers and you see, you remember, you know, conversations, the governor, then I'm reading an article saying the U.S.'s challenge with the Bahamas-China relationship perceived to be good or bad, regardless of however they view it. And again, one of the authors of that article will be joining me tomorrow, Professor Patrick Griffin. But that there is a notion of we need to do a bit more. Right? Then this is what that article was really saying, that the United States needs to do a bit more to stave off, to somehow, you know, not allow China to get too cozy with our neighbors directly behind us, right next door to us, being us, the Bahamas. From a political and a foreign policy position, one of the things you said we've been needing is funds. One of the challenges we're finding is that with climate change, we're not getting the sort of funds we need to help mitigate these climate change. One article I read said that we have about 80 years, actually 100 years before 80% of the Bahamas is no more.
That's right.
That means that we are in a state of urgency when it comes to climate change, but we're just getting words right now. Right. How does the Bahamas, do we look at ourselves and say, hey, maybe there's an opportunity to date both China and the United States in a way where we can leverage it? What is that position for us?
Well, let's look at the climate change issue. What happened in Glasgow? I mean, the world leaders made their statements, including our own statements. But the conference was a serious disappointment because it just didn't come up to proof. But before the thing was over, the United States and China struck their own agreement. So what does that tell you? At the end of the day, both countries recognize that the future of the Earth is us together, not us separate. And no matter what the rhetoric you hear, and of course the differences in their systems, I'm convinced at the end, the politics and the economics will dictate that they have to get along. But in one sense, again, this expression that Bahamas uses, it's not, you know, that's big people's business, not my business. You know, stay out of that. What I know is that so long as there are no hegemonic designs on our country and no interference in the internal affairs of our country, we're just friends with both. And, you know, we speak to both. And as you say, you try to gain an advantage for your interests with both countries to the extent that you can. I mean, the first time I'd actually heard this was after Hurricane Dorian. I was invited by a group of private businessmen in South Florida, and I was just astounded at the conclusions that they had drawn about this support, which is being given to the Bahamas by the Chinese government. And they were saying that, you know, we must prevent bases from being built here. There's no possible way the Chinese would first of all want to put a base here to do what precisely. I mean, you know, it just made no logical sense to me. So that's what I say. To stay away from conspiracy theories and to apply one's logical mind to this. Now, the real politic of this is that once the United States, if this takes on a life of its own, once the United States, we've got to keep our heads down. It's as simple as that because we're just too close to them. And there are all sorts of levers that can be used that that Bahamians will turn against their government if there's a perception that we are not supporting U.S. policy. You know, right now, my own view is that we should abolish visas going to the United States. It shouldn't need the visas for Bahamians to go to the United States. It should be reciprocal in the way that U.S. citizens can come here. And And that's just my view. And, you know, I told them the whole country, the Bahamas, the 400,000 of us could go to the U.S. and it wouldn't be a blip on the map. So that's the direction we ought to be going in there. But as I said, there's a real politic, and no Bahamian government will get on the wrong side of the United States. So all of this stuff about choosing China and China being under the influence, I think that that is simply misplaced. We have to use your word, the leverage, to protect our interests to the extent that we can.
Minister of Foreign Affairs and Public Service, Minister Fred Mitchell, joining us on the show. Then let's go to this, to what you mentioned there with the visas and travel. You know, that's one of the big things with us, right? As Bahamians, we love to travel. Florida is like, you know, Grand Bahama. Right? It's right there for us. And we have a lot of Bahamians who have, who go there and who have dual citizenship because of the proximity, et cetera.
Right.
When you talk about, you know, listen, we shouldn't have to need visas to travel. How does that conversation go with which ministers or which area do we have these conversations? And how do we then make inroads to resolving this or getting the outcomes we desire?
Well, I mean, it's for our diplomats and for it to be done in private discussions. You know, one of the interesting things, I had this chat with Henry Kissinger, who was the former Secretary of State, and I told him that the interesting thing about our country is that we have an influence on the United States which is outsized to our own size, because the Northeast establishment, which controls the United States, likes to vacation down here. So if you went to Albany, Old Fort Bay, Lifford Key, Paradise Island, you run into people who essentially control the world, or a good part of it, because they're all U.S. citizens and they come from the Northeast of the United States. I was talking to our honorary consul in Houston this morning, and he was telling me there are about 10 or 11 billionaires who live in Houston who have properties located in Lifford Key. So, you know, the country is a place where they are, and you get to rub shoulders with these people who are influential around the world, and an opportunity which other countries may not get. Again, so you have to use the leverage for that kind of thing.
When you talk about, if you're just tuning in again, Minister Fred Mitchell joining us on the show, you know, one of the things I always ask, Minister, you know, how do we, as Bahamians, we're a small country, but we're very powerful people. Bahamians excel, I mean, to a degree, exponentially across the world, right? We are somehow, we are in Dubai, you know, consulting
60 live in Dubai. 60 Bahamians that we know. 60. When I went to Singapore, I threw a dinner for the Bahamians living there. 20 Bahamians living there, working at the Marine Park. They had gotten trained at Atlantis, and the Singaporeans came here, saw them, hired them, and they were working over there and making themselves a good living. So this is what I'm saying. You have Bahamians across the world. And that passport's got to mean something so that they have a smooth passage around the world. One of the reasons we put a consulate general, and this is where you were talking earlier about the disagreements between ourselves and the other regime, they thought that this thing was just a sinecure created for one of our supporters. We put the consulate there because Bahamians, we found, lived in the Washington area. They had one parent or other who were Bahamian, but they'd moved to the States. They wanted to stay in touch with their country, but they found that the embassy itself was not paying sufficient attention to things they were interested in. And they weren't interested in, you know, I got locked up or I got a traffic ticket and I knew you need to come and rescue me out of jail. They were at influential spots and still are in that area. And so they were saying, how can I help? What can I do to help? And they wanted someone at that level to reach out to them. So we put the consulate there for that specific reason. And the Davis administration has given that remit to the Ministry of Foreign Affairs to reach out to the diaspora, because the survival of the country depends on those people, to some extent, who live overseas. And policies are influenced, to some extent, by those people who live overseas. And so we've got to have a constant outreach to them a constant contact with them. There is a young man, for example, who works in the jet propulsion lab in Pasadena, California. Where would he find a job in the Bahamas with those skills? It just isn't going to happen. But he's got influence, he's got contacts, which can make life better for Bahamians who live here, because all of us are taught in our culture to reach back and help those who are still in the islands. And that's part of our remit.
You know, and I'm glad that you said that too, because that is something that is one of those things. I remember that that was one of those things that stuck with me in the idea of the Christie administration, right? And I know that the former administration spoke of the same, and I know that's how we had gotten Christina Alston. That whole relationship just blew right up with BPL, and there's a lawsuit, all kind of terrible things there. But that there is something there, that we have educated so many brilliant Bahamians around the world, home and abroad, right? Yeah. We have them home and abroad. But abroad gives those certain levels of experience that perhaps we can use for the betterment of the country. And in addition to that, what we would hope that the embassies or the consulates would be able to do is to open up markets for our people at home. When you view the consulates, and like you said, the remit of helping those in the diaspora around the world, how do we use these consulates? How do we use these embassies to increase market share for Bahamians in the country abroad?
Well, you know, it's a very finely balanced or curious argument, because I was talking to our Minister of Health, Dr. Michael Davo. I think he told me that since he became minister, we lost 47 nurses to the United States. Mm-hmm. So here's what's happening. And it's a similar argument in the climate change area. So the Bahamas government is using the taxes of the Bahamian people to train people. Most people go to public schools here. They are trained at the University of the Bahamas. They get their certificates in nursing or their degrees in nursing. And then the next thing you know, they're in the United States. So Bahamian taxpayers are in fact subsidizing the development of the United States. Mm-hmm. And the question is, what does the United States owe us for that? And, you know, Joe Biden, again, was quite unapologetic. He said, the United States wants the best. And as long as you keep producing them and we can afford to pay for them, we're going to get them. Mm-hmm. You can't blame their society. But as you know, in the climate change argument, one of the arguments being put by the Indian government, for example, is that the developed countries, UK, Canada, Australia, and the United States were able to use the natural resources of the world for free, the air. They were able to pollute it for free. They were able to cut down all the forests for free. And now that, you know, the rubber's meeting the road, they're telling the countries like India, who are trying to catch up, no, you can't cut down the trees. No, you can't use the air. So they're saying, well, what are you going to compensate? How are you going to compensate us for your use 200, 300 years ago for free? And we now can't develop because you're saying we can't use this free commodity. Mm-hmm. So a similar argument then with regard to our students who are ending up in the United States. Public education by taxpayers of Bahamians, those same people who work over the lattice and those same people who are working in the public service for $210 a week, their taxes, their VAT, helping to develop the United States. Now, what does the United States do in response to that? And that's the moral argument that we have to make. Of course, there is the Export-Import Bank that they have, OPIC. Of course, there is the Inter-American Development Bank, which provides loans. But the question is there a more direct link between our development and the U.S. Treasury to help us get along? So one of the, I talked about the visa-free access, which I think would be one of the ways to compensate. So there'd be a free movement of labor between here and the United States. You know, we'd have to concern ourselves with any of those things. And then there would be a free movement of capital between the two countries, while each maintains their own individual identity. Of course, the modalities have to be worked out on it. But that's something which would which is aspirational, I think, you know, at this point, we're just talking about it. But of course, we're very small, and to get the conversation going is difficult. Now, one of the diplomats here from the United States was a Mormon, and he helped with a lot of education when he was here through the church. And before he was leaving, he said, you know, he thought that there was a good chance that we might be able to negotiate a provision which allowed Bahamian students to stay in the States and work 10 years beyond their time in the States on the understanding that they'd come back to their country after the 10 years. I thought that was quite an attractive proposition. Mm-hmm. We started some initial discussions before we left office in 2017, but of course the new administration didn't choose to pursue those, and it went dead as an issue. But we have to continue to have the conversations. You know, policies begin by conversations. And I like to say that, you know, when your voice is all you have, you use your voice.
You know, one of the things that has been interesting is watching, you know, in another Caribbean leader take such a large international stage as Mia Mottley, Prime Minister Mia Mottley of Barbados. Yes. And one of the things my good professor, Dr. Gilbert Morris, would always say that we, each one of us as international, as a country in the Caribbean, individually have no might per se, but collectively we would have more of a might, creating some sort of block to present our issues, in particular, say, for example, our offshore financing, so that, you know, all of this blacklisting, perhaps we can become a little more solidified. When we look at ourselves, even with CARICOM and our Caribbean brothers and sisters, what is the impact, or how is that relationship? And have we in recent years used those relationships to give us some sort of international political might?
I think we have. Again, for the past 4.5 years, it's been a project in kind of abeyance. But I think generally speaking, even the last administration came to understand that no one's going to speak to the Bahamas by itself, that you actually have to speak in the collective. And so if CARICOM didn't exist, it would have to be invented, because, you know, you're 14 small countries. Without Haiti, you are about 6 million people. Add Cuba, add Haiti, and then you go up to about 20 million people. But that's still, in the scheme of things, next to China, 1.3 billion, next to the United States of 350 million. So you're sort of small potatoes in the scheme of things. But you are right that it is better for us to work together and to use the moral suasion to bring about changes in the policies. And Mia Mottley, I've been, you know, friends with her for quite a long time, and I'm glad that she's had her shot on the public stage. And I've said to the younger politicians who are coming behind me, you know, Shakespeare says all the world's a stage and we're merely players, and we have our times on the stage, we have our exits and our entrances. But while you're on the stage, you're supposed to do what you're supposed to do and to move the project along. And so, you know, CARICOM's not perfect, but while we're on the stage, we have to make the points, and make the points forcefully to those people who have the authority and the power in the world for to be able to move to help us develop. So our policy, to go back to Sir Lyndon Pindley, is multilateralism, and depends very heavily on coordinating that foreign policy with other CARICOM countries. We now have a new ambassador to CARICOM, that's Leslie Miller Bryce. She'll be getting started. I hope there's some logistics issues right now with going to Barbados, but I'm hoping that at least Prime Minister myself be able to go down there for the Republic Day, which is a significant step by Mia Mottley in the development of their country. I've been a committed Republican with a small R since I've been in politics. Unfortunately, our leaders chose not to become a republic when we became independent, but it's been a project of mine, somewhat muted because people don't quite understand what it actually means. But that's certainly the direction we ought to be going in as well. But that's a good step, and Mia Motley has been successful in being able to do that. You know, praise to her and kudos for her for being able to pull that off.
You know, something interesting that Prime Minister Motley did in a foreign relations bid that many may not understand, but she posted an embassy, created an embassy in the metaverse.
That was quite interesting.
And I loved it. And I think, you know, for those who, you know, for those of us who are in this crypto culture, right, we have an understanding that the world is changing in the financial services, and this metaverse, even in of itself, proves to be a frontier that if you're not ahead of or with, you get left behind, and we're playing catch up. I wonder, even in just your private discourse after seeing it, what was it, were there any just subtle conversations? I'm sure that takes more an understanding of it, but just subtle conversations.
There's some people like you know, Tony Ferguson, for example, who's in financial services, and Craig Gomez, who's another friend in the financial services sector, his brother Andy. They know. I just have an instinctive feeling that people have a greater sense of what this actually means. So, you know, I rely on them you know, people to rely on to talk about where does this go, what does this mean, how can we take advantage of it? And I, you know, I've risked calling names, but you know, there are many other people. Of course, Andrew Allen is another person who's very thoughtful on the development of public policy in these areas. You mentioned Gilbert Morris already, Dr. Keith Russell, who ran our campaign up in Grand Bahama. I'm hoping that we'd be able to formalize the relationships with these folks through the University of the Bahamas. We've now started Alma Adams, who's an ambassador at large, has the responsibility now of developing the Foreign Service Institute in conjunction with the University of the Bahamas.
Oh, wow.
For the training of diplomats. So all of the diplomats are coming out will be run through some time and measures in that institute. And I'm hoping to name the institute after a young diplomat who died in Italy in what appears to have been a tragic set of circumstances. His name was Al Ray Ramsey. And I want to show these young diplomats that that this is something which, you know, you make an impact on your country by, and you don't have to wait till you're 60 or 70 years old to do so. So there's a lot of work going on behind the scenes, and I hope this gives me a jumping off point to say, as using my hat as chairman of the Progressive Liberal Party, there's a great deal of anxiety and impatience. You know, why isn't this done and isn't done and so on and so forth. Just is things just take time, and I really appeal to people to have a sense of, first of all, to apply one's logical mind to these issues. It took 4.5 years for us to get where we are. You can't unscramble 4.5 years in 8 weeks. The public service, just by its nature, moves very slowly. You have a new team trying to accommodate itself to how government works. There was a 75% turnover in members of parliament. Mm-hmm. So everybody's new at the task. Fresh, dynamic. The pieces have to learn how to fit together. But it's getting done. And I think one of the surest signs of that, of course, was Alfred Sears opening the straw market. I'm really pleased that straw market is open. Really pleased that the board of BPL has been replaced. So now we can get to the bottom of how we resolve some of these problems. And there are exciting things coming because the government of Mr. Davis intends to solarize the country. We have a promise that 30% of our energy is supposed to be in renewables by 2030. Right now, they tell us that we are less than 1% on the way to that. So we have to make sure that all residences by 2030 have solar power, so they're off the grid. There are exciting things coming like that, and I want people to give us an opportunity to really shift the paradigm, and let's get toward these climate change issues, to become more thoughtful in the way public policy is applied, to be less rumor-oriented, less conspiracy theory oriented, all of those kinds of things. And I think you'll see all of that unfold very shortly. And our diplomats will be going out into the field, and that will be their job going forward.
Minister, I know I asked you for just 1 hour, but can I get 10 more minutes? Is that okay after the break?
Yeah, the problem is I have an appointment which I have to make here.
Well, you know what? Let's wrap it up here then. I won't keep you.
I would say five minutes, but yeah.
Well, yeah. The news break is five, so don't even worry about it. Yeah. What we will do then is hopefully we get a part two to this. But I will ask you this final question with regard to the public service. One of the things I know our new Minister of State, Pia Glover-Rowell, for the public service has, you know, been very forthright with the situation with regard to the hirings since that, you know, pre-election, right? The election date. And, you know, we've heard, you know, electioneering as a word being brought up. We know that this is something that is kind of a cultural position that we've been seeing for decades. What makes this any more different? Or is it just a matter of fact that it is what it is? Is there any cue to us changing this type of behavior?
Well, I'm not sure what you can do, because in our system, there's no interregnum in our system. So the prime minister and his cabinet has the power to make these decisions up to the point at which the new prime minister is sworn in. So that's the way it is. Now, I was talking to the Prime Minister about the possibility of a transition act, right?
Yes.
And which might be able to govern these things. But there are some constitutional issues, because as long as the cabinet has the power, how do you constitution, without changing the constitution, how do you deal with it? Now, heretofore, many governments decided for moral reasons, when you came within a certain period of time, you just didn't do it. But, you know, you have the power to do it. And I guess if you see the end is coming, just like in the case of President Trump as he's going out the door, or U.S. President Clinton as he was going out the door, you sign a bunch of pardons because you can do it. And, you know, there's nothing you can do. So that's it. And I don't think with that, you know, due respect to Minister Brentzel Roll, and I, in another forum, I would have some more choice words to say. But I just say only this, due respect to him. The point wasn't to say any other thing than these are the facts. That's all. But don't come along and deny that it actually happened, when the minister, Mrs. Glover-Rowell, could simply go right back to the records and tell you these are the facts. And the facts are stubborn. They can't change. You did it. So confess. You did it. And now let the public draw its conclusions from what you did, but don't deny that it happened. That's the only point I make for now. It's not a political show, so I won't go any farther than that.
Minister, thank you so much for the time. Thank you. I know you're busy and we appreciate it. The Bahamas, of course, every time we can learn more about ourselves is very important to us. And I thank you for your candor in the conversation. Minister Fred Mitchell, safe travels, sir.
Good. Thank you. Blessings.
All right.
Bye-bye.
You're listening to The Hit Back with Nahaja Black, Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. Minister Fred Mitchell joining us there for that segment. I want to get your thoughts. Why is it important to discuss our foreign relations? Why is it important? Because we need to know how we are working and interacting in the world. I'm always curious of these things. Then it helps me to understand our maneuvering, how we are, you know, dipping into the well across the world. Shout out to Barry Roll, who's listening to us Barry, Hollywood, Florida. Shout out to Barry in Hollywood, Florida. To Samara, who I think is in Houston somewhere. If you're tuning in, you're listening to The Hit Back with Nahaja Black, Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. When we come back, my good friend C.A. Nuri joins us. We'll be back right after this.
We are working to protect our country, our people, and our livelihoods so that we can move forward. The vaccine is safe. The vaccine is easy. The vaccine is essential for our recovery. If we want to rebuild our economy, if we want to get back to our jobs, if we want to get back to our lives, our families, we must do this together.
Rev customers already get more channels, more sports, and more speed. Now, we're giving more Christmas with up to $250,000 in cash and prizes. Sign up or upgrade to Rev Trio to win prizes like rent and mortgage payments, trips to see your favorite sports teams, plus up to $20,000 in our Rev Cash Vault. Want to win more Christmas? Call 601-8992 today and ask for Rev Trio. Rev, you and us together.
This is Guardian Radio 96.9 FM, Nassau, Bahamas.
Listening to the Hit Back with Nahaja Black, Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. Listen here, man, this weather outside ain't frightful, it's delightful. The children's school has said now you need to get, you know, a sweater season. Something about that just brings me so much joy. It is the hope of chilly season, like a little weather. But you know, things ain't been the same for a long time. Tell the truth. When was the last time you actually went to John Canoe and it was cold? Tell me. You tell me how many times recently in the past 5, 6, 7, 8 years you had on all your winter clothes and you were sweating. Can't wear no boots. You're listening to the Hit Back with Nahaja Black, my good friend C.A. Nuri, joining me all the way from wherever he is. And we have a call on line. C.A., what's up, buddy? You got to unmute yourself. It's that kind of time. Unmute yourself. It's good to see you.
Oh, I thought you said you have a call on the line. You went straight to the caller. But I'm always good, man. I see you dressed right up. You look nice. It's very nice to see you dress up today.
I had a speaking thing.
Was that all for the minister? Because I saw you had a good...
I mean all for the minister. I had a speaking thing. And so I was already dressed up. So the minister just got the overflow. Won't he do it?
Won't he do it?
I had a speaking thing. All right, I got a... we have a caller. Let's welcome the caller on the line. Caller, you're on the Hit Back. Welcome.
Golly, David, it's this Dark Universe along with you and your co-host, Nahaja.
How are you, Brayman?
We want justice, law, and order in our country.
Amen.
Well, what I want to say to you, right? Mm-hmm. I'm going to say a couple of things. The thing is, when you get a guest on your show, and especially those that's in authority pertaining to running the Bahamas, you should have them answering calls. Because guess what? We vote on some of the things that it's be into, we not into. Okay? Like holding your hair down. The United States is our friend, and the United States people was our friend and family before the Chinese came into being. We get nothing from the Chinese. They may be getting some money from under the table. All the Chinese doing is going places and stealing our lands. And I'm speaking from experience, okay? The thing is, we are grown. We are grown men and women, and we don't want anybody holding us as any little children. I got a message from a member in the United States, right, that when Fred goes to those meetings, he just carry on like he afraid. The thing is, when we can't get our rights in this Bahamas, we don't need them to be going to the mic because they control the mic and talking to us. We want our country and we want to build our country for us, not for any foreigners on America or on our side. Okay? The Chinese are 4,300 and something years old. We know what we want. So don't let them come with that foolishness. This is our country. Thank you.
Brayman, I'm trying to figure, did you miss the part where he talked, the minister spoke about how that our greatest ally and we can't be on any other side, you know, we can't be against the United States and that they're our closest ally, number one ally. Like, you heard that part though, right? Like he was effusive on the United States. You heard
the
that?
The Americas are our family and friends.
But I mean, did you hear the minister say, in essence, those things? You heard that, right?
But I don't like what he said about holding your hair down. We don't need to hold our hair down any place. We got family in the United States.
Brayman, I got to make sure you heard so that you get full understanding, because I feel as if you didn't hear some parts of it. Maybe, or I don't know. I just want to make sure that you heard all that was said, that the minister was saying that, hey, you leverage what you can in the middle, but we are definitely closer to the United States, that we have to, we will not get on the wrong side of them, and that you also take advantage of some relationships with China. I mean, listen, this is, you walk the fine line. I get what he's saying. This is foreign relations. You walk your line so that, you know, you get the best out of both worlds. But I definitely heard him be more effusive for the United States. And his talk on China was, y'all don't get scared of China. Now, mind you, it is what it is on that. A lot of concerns and misconceptions, and probably rightfully so, some issues with the way the Chinese government does things. And definitely there should be some concern with any sort of business in certain areas of the country where China is involved. But I think you leverage it. You use your relationships where they are. But Brayman, I was here for it. He was not.
Nigel, they are dragging into this foolishness with China. They are dragging us into it. We're not into that. We're not into China. Okay?
What are they dragging us into? Sorry, I just want to make sure. What are they dragging us into?
This diplomatic relationship. We don't need that, and we don't want that. We are fine without them. Always been.
All right. Thank you. I appreciate you, buddy. Well, I mean, Brayman has strong feelings on it, you know, and he feels as if we're fine without them. I don't see it. I see that we use where we can and leverage the relationships where we can. I don't necessarily believe in fear. Fear is with the unknown. When you don't know, then you fear what you don't know. Like, that's the dark, right? You fear the dark because you think something's there, cut on the light, and it's revealed. Some things are fearful because we just don't know, or we seek not to understand. If you have more knowledge and more understanding, then you have more control. We are fearful because we feel as if we lack control. We lack control because we lack knowledge and understanding. Let us get more knowledge and understanding. Where you are fearful, rightfully so, is maybe we believe that our leaders lack knowledge and understanding, which can be seen by a lot of the ways our leaders have negotiated for and on our behalf in the past 30, 40 years. So that is where the concern should be, on how much knowledge do our leaders have, an understanding of do our leaders have in geopolitics and in the opportunities or the way in which we can leverage ourselves and leverage relationships. So maybe that is where the fear comes from, our confidence in our leadership. If they are able to, with knowledge and understanding, have better control of a situation and in a space and in a room. However, ladies and gentlemen, we must be mindful that that is why you have, we need more than us. I think it has to be a whole Caribbean bloc that has to negotiate. We can't even get an ambassador in the country. I read a wonderful article, Cecil, an editorial in The Guardian, I think it was. And the editorial was, whoever wrote it was that, you know, why are we making noise about not having an ambassador? Is it a snub? That was the question I was supposed to ask the minister. You know, is not having an ambassador a snub? I wonder if I could get the U.S. I'm going to try to get the U.S. Chargé to join me on the show. That's what I'm trying to do. Anyway, CA, your thoughts on the entire conversation?
Entire conversation with Mr. Mitchell or the entire conversation with Brayman?
I don't know. You pick one. Maybe bring them all together.
Both were entertaining. It's always good to hear the minister come on to the public and then speak frankly about what is happening within his ministry. It's clear that he has an understanding about global situations, you know, foreign affairs, that he's adept with it. And I appreciated his frank conversation with it. I was entertained by the conversation you had about United States and China. And the minister explained exactly what it is. When big elephants are fighting, small ants are supposed to get out of the way. That has nothing to do with us, right? Our goal is to leverage and get the best benefit possible for the Bahamas survivability. If China wants to invest, let them invest and the Bahamas will benefit. If the United States want to invest and help us along, we embrace that. We understand how, our proximity to the United States, and we understand our history and our connection to the United States. And the foreign affairs minister explained that very well. In terms of Bremen and his concerns, I think that U.S. media, U.S. television, movies has demonized China over the years. You know, all of James Bond movie have the red China. You know, the espionage movies have the red communist China, and they're trying to take over the world. So that's in our back of our minds, right? This is what we learned, and especially around Bremen age, who enjoys a 007, right, a movie. He has that conspiracy theory built into him. Mm-hmm. So he believes that all communist countries are out to get us, free world, first world countries, you know. So mm-hmm. I understand his fear, even though his fear is not warranted at this present time. But yes. moving forward, the Bahamas needs to negotiate better. Mm-hmm. We need to understand where we stand in the global things and the global arena, and negotiate for our survival and negotiate for our citizens to benefit, right? We know we're going through some financial strains right now, and we need more foreign investors. And the Republic of China is prepared to invest. So we need to encourage them to come. Go ahead. Sorry.
And forgive me, but I want to say this, though. When we talk about investing, we need to have an idea as a country, where do we want investment to happen, right? Because people couldn't, Cecil, man, things just vex me, you know, like you say that, you know, vex the rat, it just yuck up my vexation. You know, when I hear of the deals our leaders would go into, and you wonder to whom this deal really benefits when you make such an egregious one, you know, and you call it for the people. I mean, we can go case in point. What is this deal over at Paradise Island? 150 years max that one can lease the land at a minimum of like $140,000 a year. If you were go to 25 years, we're looking at what, 650 or six something? No. What was the amount, Cecil? 25 years, 140. You do the math for me. I think it was like some millions of dollars. Anyways, that's just the leasing of it, right? And knowing that it continues in perpetuity. The funny thing is that it goes on to about 150 years. But we know based on if climate change is actual and is, the numbers are as it is, we only going to be here for 80. So, I mean, they're doing this to make sure we die out. Like, I'm trying to figure out who's this for. Like,
we want to be in the land. And we need to have proper conversation in context, too. Let's change it to 80 years, right? Mm-hmm. This lease is 80 years. Is the 80 years egregious? Is it that harsh? Or people say, okay, that's only 80 years, I understand, right? And what it is that 150 years sounds big to us. But in truth, normally we settle land. And if we settle land, can that mean a millennia? Surely 150 years is short in contrast to own it for life, indefinitely, for eternity. Right, we make sure we're not selling things for eternity anymore.
Your eternity, you know. Make that point on that. But what also was a point on that, we didn't sell the land, but we also aren't getting the value of the land based on improvements that has been done to the land. That was also noted. So it isn't even as the appreciated value with product or production or goods on the land that gives it value. So I could build a structure on my land and its value increase. I would then pay the value based on that land with the structure, that value there. Oh, no, not this deal. No, just whatever the land is. Let's try to kind of like ignore whatever's on it. And what is the value of the land? And then we will discuss.
What is on it at this present time?
I don't know, but it definitely could be valuable.
Nothing. Yeah,
But you go into business knowing full well that, hey, I need to get the best out of it for me. And I wonder, is that the best deal? It isn't that it's a deal. The company is a real company. Royal Caribbean is a real company. It isn't a toy, play company. Not one where we can say, oh, well, you know, we're giving this away to someone who doesn't know what they're doing. No. But what we do know is that Royal Caribbean is not short on funds. It invests in the Bahamas because there's some strategic benefits of the Bahamas. It didn't just want Cocoa Key. It also wants Paradise Island. Disney wants Lighthouse Point. There are some strategic advantages for us. Are we maximizing that? And is that the only type of investment that we want or looking for? So that where we have to say, okay, you know, when we talk about relationships with countries, you want to invest, make sure that these investments are not just beneficial and by and large to you. We need to see immediate, not just jobs, but something else. We want to build things together with Bahamians and your investment. Is that something we can do?
And Nahash, we've been having that conversation for a while. For decades, we've been complaining that our governments are not negotiating well or better on our behalf, right? And this is where the Ministry of Economic Affairs comes in. Perhaps we need an outline on where do we see the Bahamas, right? What exactly do we want the Bahamas to be invested in? At this present time, our main objective is to get foreign direct investors to come into the country, and for whatever project they have is what we welcome, not a particular project that we go advertising about, right? What is it that we see or that we want for the Bahamas? I haven't heard any conversation of lay Bahamians, business people saying, you know, perhaps we need to encourage foreign direct investors to come and invest in this particular area. You know, we know that a number of foreigners want to go fishing. Mm-hmm. Right? They see the potential of our seas. When Bahamians say no, say, okay. You know that a number of foreign investors want to do farming. And the Bahamians say no, right? So the one where they sure they can go into right now is tourism. Mm-hmm. They sure can go into that, right? The government hasn't put any position to them to say, well, this is what we're looking for. Are you interested in? No Bahamian has put any information towards them to say, this is what I want to partner with you for. So they come with their plans.
Because we don't have one.
And why get mad and vexed at the foreign investor for coming with their plans? Their goal is to go into tourism and to build big, right? And to get their returns. And our returns is we can get jobs.
Yeah.
Right? Now, if we have one or two Bahamians who want to partner with a foreign investor, you know, good. But let's call the big wigs, because we have a lot of black millionaires here, a lot of white Bahamian millionaires here, who seemingly are not interested in investing.
No, they don't.
But a lot of poor people like talk about it though. They're the ones who don't do money, but they can complain.
Listen, and then I had the Minister of Economic Affairs on, and
did he outline any plans where you see the Bahamas?
No, I didn't get a good one.
I was just making sure that he...
Yeah. No, I didn't.
That was a setup. Yeah. I understand.
No, it was good. I was coming with that. That was just... Okay. But you, a way to serve it up for me so I could hit it there. Yeah, no real walk away.
You have no idea where we can be in 20 years.
Aspirational sort of, nah. I didn't walk away with it.
And I can bait you again. Let's say 80 years. No, that's when the
we're in the sea. We're in the sea.
Underwater.
We are underwater.
Any plans about refugee boats? Okay, let's go.
I heard the prime. I can't. This is a timeout. This is a segue, Cecil. This is a segue. This is it. The prime minister did an interview with Sky News recently, sometime this week. So he did it last week, I guess, and it aired this week. First of all, can I just say, I think a lot of us are super impressed / surprised at how well our prime minister is doing on the international stage in his public speaking. Prime Minister Davis is just knocking out of the park. Side note, just shout out to that. He, however, said something very interesting in this. And I'm trying to figure out, did he ever tell us that? So I was like, did he tell us that, in a few years, we could either, the best news would be that we would be refugees in the States. The worst news would be we would be swallowed up by the sea. And I'm trying to figure, did he tell us yet? You know, just a side note, did anyone tell the people that that might be our lot in life, right? Even though I know a lot of people said climate change is the biggest farce in the history of the world. Listen, I watched 2012, I believe it. It was a good movie, by the way. Anyhow, I sat there and I said, where is that plan? And the minister talked about it. I don't see where they're getting it from. I don't see if they've fine-tuned this, but I'm hoping that they're asking for this because their needs 80 years, my children will be around. 80 years is right around the corner. I had a solid 50 left. That means that they only got 30 more to go after that. You know what I mean? So at this point, there should be a lot deeper conversations on investment and global, climate change and how we are investing and mitigating these these big issues. And right now, but however, today people can't eat. So I guess it is what it is, Cecil. I guess it is what it is.
And this is where the dilemma comes in. We just don't know what it is we should be talking about. Mm-hmm. Have we had any national conversation about climate change and the destruction and the swallowing up of the Bahamas?
Not
right?
With us.
I mean, we go abroad and talk about it and talk about it flippantly, right? But the idea that Paradise Island being swallowed up is real in 80 years. The idea that this cruise line having access for 120 years and the latter part of that 120 years, 50 years, it won't exist is a real conversation. But we need to have better conversation on where we see the Bahamas, where we are going as a country, and we're not necessarily having that. You have angst on what is the economic plan, because every guest you have come on, you ask that same thing. Where you see the Bahamas, what is the plan and goal for the Bahamas in terms of investment, what we plan to do? And there's never a sensible answer, an answer that you can grab on, hold on and say, well, this is the belief, this is where we're going, and I'm going to help put my shoulder to the wheel to go towards that. Our national plan is wait, watch, and see. And the part of that plan is whatever the foreign investor comes with, we can work with them with that. Right. So if they want to build another Atlantis, another Bahama, that have nothing to do with us. We will welcome them and say, man, build what you got to do. We have a group of behemoths who need jobs. That is our national plan. Whatever you wanted to invest in the Bahamas, we'll provide the labor. Right. And I see we have a number of persons who tend to complain about that. Right. And when you ask them, what is your alternative? Right, that we could consider you as being a political party, they're just not viable. It's not viable. And the same thing about our natural resources. They said that we have aragonite and we have sand and we have oil and whatever. And you ask any Bahamian, give me a Bahamian investor who's interested, first of all, right? Because we remember we have a number of millionaires, but they're not interested in that. So just cut those people out.
Well, some already done that.
List a number of people who can finance a major project that we can petition the government saying, the person who are dredging for the aragonite, we no longer want them. This Bahamian entity is going to be the replacement for them, right? Mm-hmm. And if you find out we don't have that. We don't have that. We only have the mouth to complain, but no one has a parallel agenda or parallel plan that can replace what is existing at this present time.
Let's get a caller before we go to break. Caller, you're on the head back. Welcome.
Hi, Marsha. How are you?
I'm well, and you?
I'm fine, thank you. First time caller. I just want to chime in on something you said earlier. A possibility of us being snubbed, not having a U.S. ambassador.
Yes.
I would have been watching, I think it might have been MSNBC, don't want to be wrong, but a few weeks ago, and they were talking about the Republicans actually holding up certain ambassadors and so forth for Biden in the Senate, not even wanting to give them a hearing. And they were saying that it was basically like 100 and something. So it's a possibility that we might be in that number. They're doing the same thing that they did to Obama. So it might be that might be the case with us. I don't think that we are being snubbed. I mean, that's just my opinion. You know, I just thought I'd just put that out there.
Thank you. And I think it's been, almost 8 to 10 years where we haven't had a U.S. ambassador. I think
Avant would have been the last. I think Nicole Avant would have been the last. And right after her,
Obama's
remember
first term, right?
Yes. And after her, we wouldn't have gotten no one. And then the person that Trump nominated, he was caught up with something as a pay-to-go something in regards with Trump. So I think that that's what's going on there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, great point there. You know what? That's a lot of folks that they are holding up, though. And I thank you for reminding me of that, because I do recall some Republicans being frustrated with that process as well. Thank you so much, Carla.
You're welcome. Thank you much. All right. Bye-bye.
All right. We got another call on the line before we hit a break. Carla, you're on the Hit Back. Welcome. Okay, we lost the caller. Let's take a quick break. All right. You're listening to the Hit Back with Nahaja Black Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. We will be back right after this.
Are you on the move? Busy running errands? Do you have so much to do that you don't have a lot of time on your hands? Have you gotten your COVID-19 vaccine yet? Well, if you haven't, the Johnson & Johnson vaccine may be the one for you. It's one and done and fully vaccinated for now. Yes, you only need one jab of the Johnson & Johnson vaccine and you are done. Lower your risk of severe illness and death from COVID-19 by getting vaccinated. This message has been brought to you by the Ministry of Health and this radio station.
Food security is a challenge for many. Now in a pandemic, many more are unsure of their next meal. Through their Feed 5000 program and a $20,000 donation, AML is working to ensure that everyone has a meal for the holidays, and they're inviting you to help. Now until December 17th, visit any Solomon's, Costrite, Fresh Market, or Domino's in Nassau or Freeport, and Exuma Markets in Georgetown to donate and help feed a family in need this Christmas. No amount is too small. Remember, we're all in this together.
Your child needs nutrients every day, and Enfagrow has DHA and iron, which supports your child's mental development. Enfagrow has components which cow's milk does not contain. Support your toddler's growth and complement their diet with Enfagrow. Let's fuel the wonder. This product is not intended to be a substitute for breast milk. Milk does not contain DHA, but contains calcium and other nutrients.
Rejuvenate. Refresh. Treat yourself. Immerse yourself in total comfort. Pamper yourself. After all, you're worth it. Relax. Rid yourself of all life stresses. At Baja Retreat Anti-Aging Spa, you will find everything you need to enhance your body and spirit. Call today at 323-6711 and begin your journey to serenity at Baja Retreat Anti-Aging Spa.
We are working to protect our country, our people, and our livelihoods so that we can move forward. The vaccine is safe. The vaccine is easy. The vaccine is essential for our recovery. If we want to rebuild our economy, if we want to get back to our jobs, if we want to get back to our lives, our families, we must do this together.
When I had got prostate cancer, my family didn't know if I was going to live. At Cancer Treatment Centers of America, within days, I got an appointment. They presented me with treatment options, and you set up a robotic prostatectomy. When my scans came back, there are no signs of cancer. They don't see you as a number. They see you as a part of family. I'm going on with my life. That's a real gift.
Call us at Cancer Treatment Centers of America.
This is Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
Back, you're listening to the Hit Back with Nahaja Black Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. My good friend CA Nuri joining us. If you've missed any part of the show, don't forget you can follow us, like, subscribe, hit the notification bell as well on YouTube and on Facebook. Again, special thanks to all of my wonderful sponsors. Today is definitely a Baja retreat day. I won't lie to you. It feels like a great day to get a facial, a mani-pedi. Cecil, do you do those sort of things?
When I had money. Now that since the decline in this economy, all of this thing stuff, you know.
A good facial. Sometimes, you know, you gotta slip in that, you know, that $50 and get yourself a good one, you know.
Yeah.
If you could spare it.
That's,
if
that
you could
go towards the mortgage. Yes, I know.
That's the mortgage payment.
Yeah.
You know what I could use too? I can't lie to you. I need a gift. I needed like a weekend with no children. This is quiet. No children.
No, I just missed a child.
None.
No. I got to make sure they're safe.
Yeah. No, they're safe. They're safe with Grammy now. Yeah. Grammy watching, by the way. She listening. Grammy! But it's a good day, and I'm hoping everyone is taking care of themselves. The weather is changing. The baby boy is recovering from his cold. He's still snotty, but he's much better than before, so I'm feeling good. He's a weakling with the weather, you know? Mm-hmm. Can you give baby Cersei? I don't think you could. I don't think that's right. I don't think that's what you could do.
Would they drink it? You know, add sugar to it?
Well, I don't think you could add enough sugar to Cersei. It's just terrible. That's just terrible. But I'm wondering, like, is it too early for babies to start with the bush? I think so. Maybe you wait off on the bush. But I just was looking at him. You're so snotty. You could use some good Cersei. But no, I can't do that. Anyways, I digress. All right, everybody. CA, you're rejoining me. CA, we got some text messages here. Says the U.S. Okay, so this was in talking about China-U.S. relations, right? China loves when the world is being fooled to their advantage. They don't like Trump because he counteracts their bias. Please wake up. Okay. Someone says climate change at best is a bunch of garbage talk. That's globalist ideology to manipulate your mind to go where they want you to go. I don't even know when we get there. Is this right? I don't know. Good afternoon. Okay, but that one, the minister's in here. Someone says, good day. The last time I checked, Hong Kong is now a part of China. Ask the Hong Kong activists. Any Chinese company is a pawn of the Chinese government. They act with total impunity. It's called control. We definitely do not trust the Chinese. We do not. I don't know what I think it is what it is. I don't know how do you work that, Cecil? I mean, how do we work that?
And going back to my point, is we have had decades of China, in quotes, being the enemy in the movies, right? We grew up with this. We grew up with the Cold War with Russia and then by extension China, and we are terrified by that. And the only way to change that, there needs to be a concerted effort of trying to change the image of China. And then recently, with China being the sleeping giant awakening, and you had the bad press of what's happening in Africa and these other countries, we have that where he said, I told you so. You know, this is what I was talking about. So we're terrified. We are terrified. Mind you, we have no reason to be terrified. Mm-hmm. We have no tangible evidence to be terrified. But this narrative has been played out for so long that it's now a part of us, an innate part of us, that we are naturally afraid. And I think China knows itself, right? Mm-hmm. That they've had a bad rap over the years, and they are working towards improving their image. You know, they're negotiating, they're giving out gifts, and countries are responding in kind. There was a reason why Hubert Ingraham severed ties with Taiwan and join in with China, and the reason why subsequent government continue to do that, and you see that the rest of the world continue to do that, and leaving China Taipei, I believe that's what you call it, by themselves.
But I think the United States is in support of Taiwan as a sovereign nation. I think it is, and that's where, you know, that conflict is there as well. Wanted to ask you now, of course, something else that was in the news, big day yesterday. Straw market reopening. And I thought it was, when I saw it, you know what, it was good. It felt good.
Yes.
It did feel good. It was like a sort of a ray of hope that maybe we are getting back to some semblance of normal. Then I heard the minister of health talk about security guards. Can we just one victory at a time? So Minister Sayers opens up the straw market, and I had a good feeling with it. You know, it felt good to know that folks were going to be able to go back to work, but there were still concerns, right? So I'm trying to figure out, how do we do this today? Something else. The Bahamas Information Services sent photos to the media showing tourists walking about downtown, trying to create this image of us moving back into a place of normalcy. We see, I think it was Robert Sandy Sands saying that bookings are up to almost 90% occupancy. All of these are signs of good news. And I'm still apprehensive, Cecil. Why is it that I'm still apprehensive? Like, I'm afraid to feel good about the good news. Am I broken? What has happened in these 18 months?
I think Obama coined the phrase that you're optimistic.
Cautiously optimistic.
Cautiously optimistic. And I think that is where you are right now. I feel your concerns. I am excited to see the straw vendors out and working. I have a number of family members who have been straw vendors for 30, 40 years, right? Mm-hmm. And they've made a living and a career out of it. I appreciate the fact that the government has a plan. Yeah. And that plan is to have a shift system with a third occupancy. They have sanitation stations, you know. They have patrols, right?
Yep.
And I appreciate that. Mind you, I know we had issues keeping the bathroom clean and keeping toilet tissue in the bathroom and proper ventilation.
Having the doors on the hinges. But that was pre-COVID stuff. Problems.
Yeah, you know, that's not COVID problems at all, you know.
No,
Who cares if there's no running water?
who needs tissue if you're a woman? No, come on.
No.
Nobody.
So I'm not concerned at all. I'm not concerned at all. I believe they'll do a good job over there, right? But
right? We won't have fights anymore.
We're straight.
You don't want that.
I watched to see what is happening in Europe, and they have in their fourth wave. And usually, you and I have preempt what is going to happen in the Bahamas by watching the world and say, okay, any minute now, this is going to happen, right? And I am concerned. I am concerned that, my God, eventually, soon, you know, a matter of weeks, but a month or two, we're going to have a fourth wave.
Man, don't speak that. I can't have you speak that. No, man. Don't speak it, Cecil.
You analyze. You see it. We just get Virgin Airlines to come here. Where do you have no drink? God, have mercy.
Flying straight from.
I have a complaint now.
Did you hear the news out of Hong Kong? Where in Hong Kong, they are saying that they actually, their levels of immunity they were able to kill Delta. Like, Delta's petered out. It's died out naturally, because it could not mutate. It was so many mutations that it kind of killed itself in this NPS 14 thing. It sounds really like a new phone out there. But anyhow, somehow, now we're paying attention to Hong Kong. Maybe we are just so naturally herdy. We have such great natural herd immunity that Delta don't want us, and we killed it. Like, can we say we killed Delta? I feel like we could say that. Let's just say we killed Delta. No, let me do that, because some people could start freaking out. I don't mean that. I don't want you running around in your church with no mask on and said the Hajj said we killed Delta. I was only saying that in jest. We know nothing, please. But what I'm saying, I can't. I'm on Cecil. I'm traumatized. I have PTSD with COVID. I can't deal with any more lockdowns. I can't deal with no more shutting down. I can't deal with. I love my husband, but I've been seeing him a lot lately. I just need us to get back to normal. I just.
I like my work.
I like my children. Both of them went to school today, Cecil. It was so refreshing.
Yes.
Right? Now I have a third child. Who did that? Who did that during COVID?
COVID did that.
I'm just saying, I can't handle it. I can't handle it. I just can't. I'm emotionally done. I'm spent.
And you know, Nahaja, I wanted to say that once our government has a plan, if there is an outbreak, I just want us to have a plan, right? Mm-hmm. And I want them to enunciate that plan. And remember when we had that stage, that four stages platform. If this happens, mind you, that someone throw that away. And you're not sure what's happening, right?
But lasted one round.
If they implement that, right, to say, well, if it jumps from zero, I mean, I think we have like 7 now positive cases now per week or whatever it is, and which is low. If it's jumped from the 7 to 50, we then have a particular mechanism comes in place. And if it jumps from 50 back to 120, another mechanism comes in place that I know from now that, yes, we have a handle on it. We know what's going to happen. Then I feel more comfortable. And, and this is what our government needs to enunciate, that this is our plan. So when these things happen, I won't have to drop in paranoia to, Lord, I fear in a lockdown, because I don't believe there's going to be any more lockdown. I'm fearing a curfew. I don't believe there's going to be any more curfew.
I don't think it's going to be any
more. I want to know what the plan is, just in case something untoward happens.
And we haven't heard anything about monoclonal antibodies, that treatment that they were using a lot of, having those different stations in Florida that they were using a lot of, so that if you got sick with COVID, you can take that treatment, an outpatient treatment. We heard the Minister of Health speak about it, but we haven't heard anything that one time he mentioned it. So I would like to know what are the plans for in case of, but I really am speaking like that we will be fine. I'm looking forward to us being open season, wide open, wide open. And
Naja, I always believe in planning. I plan for everything.
I plan
just in case I don't get paid on time. You know, this way I'm going to get the extra money. You know,
you better plan though. Plan to fail.
I even plan just in case the bank puts some extra money on my bank account. So, boy, if I take it off.
No, you go to jail. Plan to go to jail.
It's not an extra bank account to pay it back. I have a plan, you know. And like I said, I didn't know. I have a plan. All kind of verbiage. I have a plan for all of that. Well, so, I expect my government to do the same. Plan.
Well, we have to have a plan, and we heard the Minister of Health say that they have a plan, Ministry of Health, but we'll see. So far, fingers crossed, all in prayer that they do have this plan that they're talking about. It would be great if it was itemized and spoken clearly so we could all follow it, but the government says that they have a plan. So it leaves me with this, that we do have the straw market. So they're indicators of positive growth, indicators of a turning tide economically. The thing for me is now, as we watch and we see these things, we know that more people are being called back to work if you work in the hotel. Straw vendors are coming back to work. So now, you know, Junkanoo Beach vendors, I assume, should be back out there. Cruise ships are docking as they've always for recently, right? And now we can get some commerce coming back in. It is a conversation then on we, the general public, how responsible will we be? And I think that is an important conversation to have, that we also play a role, Cecil, in the success of the country bouncing back. And so we have to be personally responsible for our own health. So you don't wild out and have guests on and you don't wear your masks. Sanitize your hands for now. I know it's annoying and you want to know when will it be done. We don't know when it'll be done, but the last thing we need is for an outbreak at the straw market and we got to shut it down. The last thing we need is for an outbreak at a restaurant and we got to close those down. We have to be careful. Churches, same thing. We want to be open, and this is very much important to all of us that we be open. And so we have to do these things necessary. And I would recommend, listen, it is a treatment option. The vaccine, well, I don't like calling it a vaccine. The jab, because I don't... That vaccine definition been long gone. The jab is a treatment option, and the majority of us will not have any negative reactions to it. Obviously, you don't know if you're going to be the one, but there should be, and that's why the Ministry of Health really got to do something with if you are allergic to this. This is what you need to do. We have these treatment options for you. We can take care of you, etc. Just so this is so convoluted. And that's why I need this to be done. I am just so tired of talking about COVID. I just need us to be back to normal and feel like a real country again. You say something now, because I'm exhausted with it.
Recently, I had an exchange with our friend, Alexander Hanna.
Oh, right? Yeah, brilliant.
And I was expressing the concern about what's happening in Europe. And he reminded me that we are trending downwards in terms of infections, positive infections of this COVID-19, and this is something to celebrate, mm-hmm. right? And then he reiterated the point that to this date, we have no idea of why, knowing of why we are trending downwards.
Yeah.
And that is an issue for him, being someone who records numbers, right? Mm-hmm. That we need to have specialists to analyze the data.
That's right.
We can apply the data and say, this is what was happening. This is why it's happening. So we're able to mitigate a future occurrences in the future. And mm-hmm. this is a conversation. We need to start to have some better conversations in general about COVID-19, how it relates and affects behemoths in general. So we can apply it for future outbreaks and future viruses or whatever kind in the future. And mm-hmm. I believe that we need to push our government. We need the demand of our government. We need the demand of our government, what type of statistics we need, what type of response we need. And I think our government will be for the better of it, right? We need mm-hmm. a better conversation. But back to tourism, it is good. The hotel numbers are great.
Yes.
Up to 91% in the hotel out west, right? Big groups are in and money is being made. And even as we hear that, we know the hearing that the big hotel across the bridge is making one or two employees redundant. I don't know how much mm-hmm. the number is, right? Mm-hmm. And even those persons we got to worry about and have better conversation on what these people can do and what opportunities is existing for them, right? Mm-hmm. We need to have conversations on what, in the meantime, what do we do for our citizens? What should they be preparing themselves for in terms of where do they see the Bahamas in the next 5 years, next 6 years? And I have that juxtaposed, and I can throw this in, and then sorry for changing subjects, especially when the former prime minister is saying that he called the general election because bad days are coming. You know, and I'm not sure you wanted to talk about that at all, but that's for Bowden.
Yeah, no, actually, I'm happy you reminded me of that. I actually have that sorted up for our Friday show, actually. That's why I forgot. But I wanted to play that clip in full for Friday because I need to ask folks, what are the headwinds, right? Were the headwinds VAT, an increase in VAT? What were the headwinds, the downgrade of S&P that we saw happen immediately thereafter? Or was it Moody's? I can't even keep up anymore. What were the headwinds that he's talking about? And should we know the headwinds? Like, how could you be the prime minister and we don't know the headwinds? Like, why would you? And understand what this means, though. You wanted a mandate without telling us what the mandate was for. So you wanted a mandate off of false pretenses and not the truth. So what kind of mandate would it have been? If we don't know what the headwinds are, but you said you needed a mandate, you wanted a cover because you were obviously lying by omission. And that to me, ladies and gentlemen, is one of the most egregious things. Why would he say that? Why would you say that? You're not helpful. That didn't make you look better, man. Good thing he ain't my prime minister no more. We got one quick call.
It was vexing to hear him even say that. But yeah, it is what it is.
It is what it is. No, it's with that. Go. So tired of this dude. We have a call on the line. Call, you're on the hit back. Welcome.
Hi, Nahaja.
How you doing?
I'm fine. And good evening to your co-host, C.A. Nuri. Mm-hmm. I'm going to get right to the point and cut a long story short. Because foreigners are interfering with my business, I'm going to show them how deep Bahamians can get when it comes to interfering with their business. Listen, the Bahamian dollar needs to be backed by the natural resources. I don't care what the American economy is doing right now and the games they're playing with the two parties in America. And I don't care what China business is today. I'm telling the Bahamian people, our Bahamian dollar must be backed by our natural resources, and all of our natural resources must be nationalized. That is the move now, and to strengthen us for the future. And if the things doesn't change, furthermore, I prefer to do business only with America. Okay? Obviously, Great Britain is already on our constitution, in our constitution as head of state, the queen that is. So, but between them two, only them two, there would be. We would be doing no business with other nations outside of doing it without doing it through these two major superpowers. And so they will know The Bahamian dollar has nowhere to go, and now the American dollar could be propped up once again by something real that is divine, that will never run out. And I'm asking every economist, every all of y'all in finance, to do y'all comprehend Amos Jr. Miller now. And this is courtesy to Atlantis and the and Brookfield Hospitality Management. Foolishness keep interfering with me. And until I get justice, I will turn up the volume on them they could never dream.
All right. Good, thank you, Amos. Good day. Thank you very much. Thank you, buddy. That went inside. What was that last part? Don't even want to know. Okay. All right. What you got to say, Cecil?
Clearly, Amos is having some concerns with his business. You know that he's been complaining and calling the radio stations for a while that he believes that big business is interfering on his lawn chair business on the beach. And by now, a representative in the government should have gone on the beach to explain to him moving forward what it is. And representative of the company should have been explained to him how he, his business is going to operate. And
unfortunately, what are beaches and parks, eh? Isn't that beaches and parks?
Yeah, no, beaches and parks. Somebody yeah, needs to speak to him.
Beaches and parks.
Pull him
one.
On the side. Yeah, pull him on the side and say this is what it is. So he doesn't have to have this continuous angst to call and say that he's being treated unfairly. You know, but clearly he's hurting. And as a Bahamian, we need to address his problem and address it promptly that he's able to know where he stands, right? And and that's what his frustration. So I can entertain his frustration, even though I don't understand him per se. I understand that he's not happy.
I honestly, it was the first time I heard it.
No, he called all the time. But I want to say that I expected media to ask the former prime minister what exactly he meant by this what kind of what phrase
headwinds,
he used about
headwinds.
You
but
know?
I'm sure they did. Well, you know, you got, listen, how fast you think Jasper can run? The prime minister, former prime minister ran much faster than Jasper. Jasper's a speedy one, you know. Jasper's a ninja, and the prime minister must be the Black Knight. That former prime minister, he is a ninja, because nobody can keep up. No one can keep up. And I'm almost certain that he was asked that, well, it was church service, right? So you know, you say what you say at the podium and nobody can ask you a question. It would have to have been afterwards. Anyway, see, we'll discuss that further on Friday. Thank you so much, buddy. We got to go. You're listening to The Hit Back with Nahaj, Black Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM. Everyone have a great day. See you tomorrow. We're out.